Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did they change history? Good evening and welcome back, finally, to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then we watch the movie to see whether or not it's better or worse than we remember. And then we score the movie again.
With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Well, we've had a long conversation before we started recording about how we're both doing. So let's do it. Let's do it as if it were the benefit of hindsight. I'm going to go with two.
I'm going to go with one.
Well, let's see if next week is better with the benefit of hindsight.
True, yeah.
You know when you did your introduction?
Uh-huh.
Right. When you said, and then we give the movie a score again.
Yeah.
You said it in a really defeatist way.
I was trying to, because you said finally, I was going to say, and then we score the movie again, finally. But I think I was just too busy thinking of how that would work that I delivered it weirdly.
Yeah, it kind of came out, and then we scored the movie, oh, whatever, again.
Well, I mean, if you don't like my intro.
Your intro was amazing. It was really, really good. It was just very dry.
Oh, I'll try and be... Nope, not going to do that.
Hey, guess what? It's been a while since we've been on air.
Yeah.
And we have had many people asking us where we are. And I've essentially been lying to them.
Oh.
So I had a nice email from a guy called David in the city of Buffalo in the United States of America. And he said, where are you guys? And I replied, and this is genuine, by the way. I know our listeners think we make this up. But I replied, dear David in Buffalo, we would love to tell you where we are. But if we did, unfortunately, we'd have to kill you. And funnily enough, David has not replied.
Oh, dear. Oh,
I know. It's a bit of a concern, that, isn't it?
Is that why the police were at the door?
No, that was a different thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
you should really stop doing that.
Yeah, I should. I mean, but I won't.
I mean, two words. Breaking Bad.
Well.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Anyway, moving on. As we have been away for some time, there must be, of course there must be, and we are all waiting with bated breath for Sam's anecdote of the week / month. That's how long it's been. Sam's anecdote of the week.
There's a few that I could pick from, but I just wanted to bring it down to a sad note, unfortunately.
Mm.
It came to my attention quite recently that in the past year, in terms of when we watched Curse of the Were-Rabbit, I actually haven't seen the version of the movie that says Marrow in a very long time.
Wow.
I watched it at the cinema this year, which said Melon.
Right.
We watched it for the podcast, which said Melon.
Yeah.
I saw it was on Now TV the other day, not sponsored. So I thought, I'll check to see which version that is. Also Melon. So I think unless I get the DVD out, it will always be Melon from now on. I got quite sad.
That is quite sad. You need to get the DVD out. You need to purge yourself of the Melon.
I do.
However, let's go into full-on geek mode. The the Elvish word for friend is...
Yeah.
Melon.
It is.
So,
yeah.
Maybe what the universe is telling you is that Wallace and Gromit are, in fact, your best friends.
Probably, yeah. Speak friend and ender.
You know, like when, you know, this is the problem. If you watch that movie very closely, and they're trying to, the Lord of the Rings movie, and they're trying to, Gandalf is trying to solve the puzzle of how to get into the mines of Moria. If you watch his lips very closely, the first thing he says is actually marrow.
Yeah.
And it's only later in the American version of the movie that the mines of Moria actually open. You should rewatch it. That's definitely what happens.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, I love that.
Do you know what's an astonishing fact?
No. Okay.
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean that is a bold statement because presumably there are many astonishing facts. Hey, would you like to know an actual astonishing fact?
Yeah.
Okay. So 1/5 of all the fresh water in the world. Now, just before we move on,
Imagine that statement. 1/5 of all of the fresh water in the world. So you think of all of the water. It's in your bottle. It's coming through the taps. Everything else. 1/5 of all the fresh water in the world is in Lake Baikal in Russia.
Wow.
It's an extraordinary fact. But do you want to know another extraordinary fact?
Yeah.
Okay. We have done over 50 episodes of this podcast.
Wow.
And have done only one Lord of the Rings movie.
I know, I think have we overcorrected from doing loads of Star Wars in one go, though?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I also think that maybe we haven't got the headspace, or indeed the time, to devote to another three-hour movie. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's been a while, and so we've had some emails. We've had many emails, actually. And so we should really move on to our listener email. This one comes directly to us from the UK, and it comes from Gavin in Nuneaton. And Gavin's question is this. Gavin said many nice things about the podcast. Thank you very much indeed, Gavin. Gavin's not a name you experience often anymore, by the way.
It's really not, no.
So thanks, Gavin, and well done you for keeping that name. We don't know how old Gavin is. He could be a grown up for all we know. But Gavin says that Gavin's question is actually pretty straightforward, and maybe we've even answered this question before. But this is for you, Gavin. So Gavin says, if you could be the lead character in any movie, who would you want to be?
Any movie. I don't know why the first one that came to me was Batman. I think that one speaks for itself.
So who would you be?
What do you mean?
I was making a terrible joke. Presumably you meant Batman.
Batman. Yeah. I'd love to just be in the Batman as police guy number 3.
Yeah,
that's my dream role.
You know, I have some experience with the drama things, and I always used to make a joke, which was if your character has a number after it, it's not a very good part.
Especially with background character number 3,
spear carrier 7 probably isn't going to have that much to do.
Yeah.
So you would be Batman.
I thought
he
carried the film, to be fair. Yeah, I think that would be fun just on like a stupid level. If I had to do like an. I think realistically though, Walter Mitty in Secret Life of Walter Mitty, that would be a good one for me.
Yeah.
I think personality wise, if we're not going personality wise, totally Batman.
Batman. I don't know. I think if I could be any lead character in any movie, I've got two answers. Because I'm complex. Okay. One would definitely be Jack Sparrow.
Captain.
Captain Jack Sparrow. Because he's just cool and awesome. Notwithstanding the Johnny Depp issues. I don't want to be Johnny Depp. But I'd like to be Captain Jack Sparrow. But my actual answer to that question is, if I could be anybody in any movie, I would go back and be the boy in the Neverending Story movies.
Yeah.
But not... I when I watched that movie for the first time at the age of, it was the most extraordinary thing I'd ever seen, and I so wanted to be that boy. Yeah. And I would go to bed and I would try to get myself into a dream in which I was the boy in the Neverending Story.
Nice. Did it ever work?
Once, yeah.
Cool. It's funny how that works, isn't it? That's happened to me a few times.
By the way, when I said once, and everybody thinks we're joking, it actually really did. I once had an awesome dream about being the lead character in the Neverending Story, and it was fantastic.
I believe you, because it's happened before. To me, that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Gavin, in Nuneaton, for that question. It would appear that our answer is Walter Mitty, Batman, Captain Jack Sparrow, and that kid from the Neverending Story, whose name I can't remember.
Cool. Just quickly on the Captain Jack Sparrow thing, have you seen that they've released the, or going to be releasing the Lego Black Pearl?
I did see that.
I really want it, but I don't have the space or the money.
I did get a little bit excited by it when I saw it, I have to tell you.
It comes with a free Lego compass, but you have to buy the set, the ship itself, and I can't do it.
I made a particular noise when you said free Lego compass. You said, hey, it comes, and I went,
oh.
I didn't like it that much. Anyway, moving on. Sam and I went away and we watched the 2003 classic movie, Johnny English. And from memory, I gave that movie a score, I think a very generous score of 8 out of 10. What do you give it?
I gave it a very generous 7, yeah.
Do you think your score will change?
Yeah.
Well, let's begin that conversation. Normally, when we start these things, we would go on to casting. Of course, Johnny English is famously played by Rowan Atkinson. And of course...
Oh, is that who that was?
Yeah. And of course, that role only exists because of Rowan Atkinson. So it's hard to talk about Rowan Atkinson being cast as Johnny English, because Johnny English and Rowan Atkinson is clearly the same person.
That is true, yeah. And all of the other characters that he plays as well.
Yeah. Did you know? Do you know where that? Yeah. Do you know where this movie comes from? Do you know where its basis is? Can you remember?
Probably when you say it, but not off the top of my head.
So there was a series of adverts in the late 90s, early 2000s for a bank, which I won't name because we don't do advertising, but it rhymes with Barclays.
Ah, yeah.
And it was, an agent, and his sidekick, who was called Boff. And they would in their adverts, there would be a problem that Boff would suggest that the agent played by Rowan Atkinson in the advert for the bank that we won't name but rhymes with Barclays would have to solve, and he would solve it with his credit card. And it literally comes from that.
That's both incredible and expected, I suppose.
And
probably not the right word.
And then it leads to a conversation about the casting of Johnny English. Well, it was created for Rowan Atkinson because he is Johnny English.
Yeah.
But the rest, we can talk about the rest of the cast. So what did you make of the rest of the cast in this movie?
Joshua Gibbs. Back to Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
I didn't realise Kevin McNally was the Prime Minister.
I didn't realise that either. No. Yeah, he's come a long way.
It's quite cool to see him, yeah. I think that Ben Miller playing Boff was... I know it's clearly based on the advert anyway, but I think he works so well as a comparison to Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah.
And they work well off each other in the sense that it is totally believable and it adds to the story and adds to the humour.
Yeah.
And I think it wouldn't work if it wasn't Ben Miller.
No, and actually Johnny English doesn't work without that sidekick who kind of is suggesting things. You're absolutely right. Because it only works because Ben Miller is so good in that role. And I think he actually sort of gives Rowan Atkinson more comedy because he's so good and so dry.
Yeah. And I think as well, it's like the weird sort of pairing that Boff is almost a better spy.
Yeah.
And he figures it out, but Johnny English stumbles his way into it.
Uh-huh.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm going to segue into a point that I would have made much later on. But you can't really ever quite figure out in this movie the level of incompetence of Johnny English.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, it seems a bit early to get to this, but I think it feels like one of those movies that is perfect for a child audience, in the sense that it's gimmicky, it's jokey, it plays all of these jokes all the time. But I found as an adult, it was a bit tiring and exhausting.
Yeah,
Just like, it's so obvious it's right there,
yeah,
but you're not going to go for it. And it was just... I don't know, as an adult, I think that affects it in a way. But as a child, you eat that sort of thing up.
It's true, and we're getting ahead of ourselves, but it's the same joke over and over and over again. So Johnny English is clearly incompetent, but he can look and appear to be super suave and sophisticated, but it's going to go wrong. He's going to be incompetent, but it's okay. He's going to save the day anyway. That seems to be the entire joke. Back to the cast. Did you know that one of the finest actors of our generation is an American gentleman called John Malkovich?
Yeah.
Would you know that?
I'm aware of him.
Would you know that from watching this film?
No. I don't know, how has he ended up in this? It's like the same sort of thing as how did he end up in Transformers 3?
Yeah. It's like you watch it and you think, you're John Malkovich. There's a whole movie based on you. You're the guy that makes grown-ups cry in the Of Mice and Men movie.
Yeah.
And here you are doing, I think, what we would call the Dick Van Dyke Award for worst accent ever of all time ever. And it's just, I don't know. I don't understand.
It's I think it's an interesting choice for him, his agent, and just for the movie in general.
Do you think someone said, we need John Malkovich for this? Let's just go get him, whatever the cost.
Probably, yeah. It's like, this is the only way this movie works.
Yeah, it's only going to work. But why John Malkovich? Surely there would be much better French actors out there.
I don't know. Does it sort of lose its meaning if it's actually a French actor? I was going to say in a British film, but then you'd cast a British man to do it, surely.
Did you just call me Shirley?
I knew you were going to say that.
I like John Malkovich. I think he's an extraordinary actor. I think when he sits down and reviews his movies and indeed the choices of his agent, this might be a regret. Would you agree?
Yeah, he probably skips over this one.
Yeah, but he's like, was I in this? Do you think it's... He wasn't just phoning it in. He was like WhatsApping it in. he couldn't even be bothered to phone it in. He was just on the WhatsApp.
Yeah, I feel a bit bad for him now.
I'm ranting. I can sort of feel it happening, but yeah, I didn't think he was very good.
No, in comparison to everyone else in a movie like this, I agree.
So you're right. You've got Rowan Atkinson, who's essentially doing his thing. You've got Ben, not Johnny Miller, doing his thing. You've got a decent supporting cast, and then you can move on to Natalie Imbruglia, her of singing fame. What did you make of her?
I think of all the love interests that have been in a Johnny English film, she's not one of them for me. What? Wait, no, that sounds like they're my love interests. That's not what I mean.
So Natalie Imbruglia doesn't work for you?
No, I think, I don't know, it feels like one of those classic Bond girl types, and it, I don't know if it's like the modern version of it being, I don't know, I don't really know, because I feel, in a way I feel bad for it, in a way I don't, because she plays the role quite well, and the role is good enough in the sense of she's also a competent spy. So it does work, but for me it just, that also felt a bit phoned in sometimes.
Also, it's worth pointing out that she was kind of hot property at this point. She had been... an Australian soap star in Neighbours, and like every other Australian soap star in Neighbours, had gone on to have a pop career. She had a very successful pop career, and actually, to be fair, still does. She was dating that bloke from Friends who played Ross at the time, and so she was kind of hot property, and so it felt, I guess, at the time, going back 20 odd years, a coup to have her in the movie. But I agree with you. I agree with you that the role was not particularly well written, and actually any decent actress could probably have pulled it off.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. I do think this is one of those films where the cast does their job, they do it right, and it's nothing special, but they're there and it works. Maybe not so much John Malkovich, but yeah.
But I wouldn't disagree with you, which is a thing I've said a lot on this podcast. I do think the cast in the context of the movie works perfectly well. But for me, the standout is Ben Miller. He's very, very good in this, I have to say. Very dry and sort of very, very competent in both his role in the movie as the character he's playing, and actually as an actor who knows he's playing second fiddle to the star, which is Rowan Atkinson. In terms of how the movie works from a plot point of view, it's kind of I had some problems with the plot.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see if our problems with the plot match. So I've got to put you on the spot because you agreed with me. What would be your what would be your problems with the plot?
Well, I think it's an interesting plot in the sense of, I don't know if I've ever seen a spy film do quite what they did, in the sense of it's more of a mystery, trying to figure it out on the go, something's been stolen, where did it go, who is it, kind of thing. I think that works, because I think a lot of the spy movies play on the same trope after a while. But I think the issues that I had is not just predictability in the story, but that the jokes were quite predictable. Uh-huh. And I don't know if that was a sign of age, and maybe even the plot just not quite landing in some senses is a sign of its age. And I think back then it might have made more sense and flown a bit better. But then nowadays it's just a bit thin on the ground, I think.
Yeah, there's a very thin... The plot is essentially a French person who decides he's going to wipe out the entire royal family, and then at the same time wipe out all of the Secret Service to make himself the king of the United Kingdom, to turn the United Kingdom into a great big prison.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that really bothered is too strong a word, because it's not an important enough movie to be bothered by it. But like it just felt really, it felt cheap for two reasons. One, it's a big dig at the French, and of course we famously don't like them, and that's fine. But the second thing was there was no explanation of why this random French rich man was the heir to the throne, and I felt like even in a movie of this nature where it's not supposed to be taken seriously, you would at least have put a line in the script where you would say, because he was the third cousin, fourth removed of. So that then kind of makes sense to you. And it felt like a massive plot hole that it was never fully realised.
Yeah, see, I was the same, but it almost felt like that was part of the joke, in the sense of this works because it just does, because everything else works. And I don't know, that just feels a bit iffy sometimes. It just doesn't really work.
And then the whole thing about the crown jewels being in that thing, and then they were going to be stolen and whatever. Listen, the film's 20 odd years old, right? And it's possible that we've moved on in terms of our political correctness and things like that. But making jokes at the expense of the French, and then making the English Secret Service all to be buffoons, and the royal family and the crown jewels being the symbol of everything that is what it is, it felt a touch out of date, I think is the idea that I'm trying to arrive at.
Yeah, see, it's interesting as well, because when I was diving through the trivia, it was pointed out that it's considered to either be a remake or updated version of the Naked Gun film from 1988, because they do have very similar plot lines, and even, you know, sort of incompetent spy, police right. officer type thing. It is very similar. That's and I think true. One of them clearly pulls it off quite well, and the other doesn't. And I don't want to say it's a remake, because it's obviously not. But following, it's so similar, but there's clearly a way to do it.
Yeah, I think, and by the way, before I make the next point, I have not seen the most recent Naked Gun movie. But there will never, ever, ever be another Frank Drebin #/ Leslie Nielsen. Nobody will ever be as good as he was in that role. And you feel like that Rowan Atkinson, who I actually think is excellent in this. I mean, you can't argue with how good he is at doing this kind of thing. But if you're reaching for Frank Drebin or Leslie Nielsen in anything that he's ever done, you're never going to get there. It's just not possible to do.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. How cool would it be to have a crossover movie of Johnny English and Frank Drebin?
I would pay quite a lot of money to watch that. but
I'd pay to get it made.
I would hand over all of my available cash, which isn't a lot, to be fair, and you probably wouldn't get anything out of it. But there is in there somewhere the best idea for a movie the world has ever seen. So on the one hand, you've got Johnny English representing the United Kingdom and their Secret Service, who's coming up against his counterpart in the US, Frank Drebin, played by Leslie Nielsen. That is a movie that one day when AI takes over the world, we should and must make. The world demands a Johnny English, Frank Drebin crossover.
I think the movie should end where they don't actually solve the crime. It's so meta that they actually just don't manage to actually do it.
They're so incompetent they cancel each other out.
Yeah.
Have you seen the new Naked Gun movie, by the way?
I actually haven't,
no. No, I do really, really want to see it because we're slightly off topic here, but I'm kind of in my heart, I'm utterly against it. But the reviews have been actually very good.
Yeah, I think they've tried to promote it in a sense of you need to go to the cinema to see more comedies.
Yeah.
Because it's very rare that they do well now.
But I think as well that's just the marketing thing for that movie, isn't it? Hey, the world doesn't have enough comedies. Yeah. Go and see this. And people do. Hey, would you like to know how much money this movie made? Are we interested in box office?
I am, yeah.
So it was made on a budget of $40 million. So not a great deal of money. And what would you think it made at the box office?
10 million.
It made a pretty substantial $160 million. Wow. But most of that, of course, is confined to the UK. So it was a big hit in the UK, less so in other areas. And how many awards do you think it was nominated for?
Nominated, two or three, maybe?
No. Nope.
But that's even a stretch.
This might be the first film we've ever watched that was nominated for none. Nothing.
Right.
Nada.
Wow, okay.
But it did get some pretty decent reviews. But more recently, after some decent reviews at the time, it's kind of died. You know, like, so the point that I'm trying to make here is that you and I have watched loads of films that become cult movies and very popular over time. So B-movie, reasonably well reviewed, but became a massive hit later on. This movie has suffered from exactly the opposite of that. So it began, and I have the numbers in front of me. So when the movie was released, it had a really good score. So on Cinema Score, it was graded an A. On Rotten Tomatoes, as it was back then, it had like 88%. And wow. Metacritic had given it a score of 87 out of 100. But if you go on those websites now, on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got 32%. It's got 51 on Metacritic and a D on Cinema Score. So unusually for this film's done the opposite of some of the other movies that we've seen. It's gone backwards. It was well reviewed at the time, and instead of becoming a cult favorite, has now become largely, not interesting.
Wow. It must be time that's kind of ruined this movie. There's a point that I do want to make about it later on, but that's more of a conclusion. But it is interesting to see that it just sort of, it didn't necessarily drop off, but people just didn't like it as much. Do you know what, as well, this is one of those films that I think is famously played on ITV on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And I think maybe people just got sick of it. That would make a lot of sense.
I think that's probably true. And I think as well, and I made this point earlier, but I do think, and here we are on shaky ground because nobody wants to look woke for the sake of being woke, but I do think the idea that you've got an American playing a French man who wants to get rid of the royal family to turn the UK into a prison is possibly bordering on being at best xenophobic and at worst something else. It just feels a little bit out of date to me. It hasn't aged well, I think, is what we're saying.
Yeah, I think that's a storyline you couldn't do today.
Well, you could, I think, but you'd have to do it in a much, much more sophisticated way. Well, but the joke is the English don't like the French, and the French don't like the English. Well, okay, fine. That's true, probably, or at least it's true by cliche. But it's not really true in real life, and maybe, you know, you'd like to think the world has moved on since then.
Yeah.
The soundtrack for this movie is interesting, because it doesn't really have one.
No, I did think what was there was very spy-esque, though.
Yes.
And it felt, you know, it was one of those copy-paste jobs of, this sounds like a spy film, let's chuck it in there. Yeah.
He, the guy that wrote the soundtrack is a guy called Edward Shearmer, or Ed Shearmer. He's a British film composer. And he's
Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran. No, it's Shearmer. And he's done some films, but more than anything else, he's an orchestrator. So he's worked with a guy called Michael Kamen, and Michael Kamen is a very well-known orchestrator and film composer. He's the guy that did License to Kill, Die Hard, Lethal Weapon. Famously, he did Highlander as the orchestrator of some of the songs and movies from music from Highlander. So this guy isn't really a kind of movie composer in the sense of that. He's the guy that somebody writes a theme and then he goes away and makes it into a piece of music with an orchestra. But it just seemed to me to be a collection of fairly good spy songs or spy music and then, well-known songs from different bands. I'd forgotten that Robbie Williams, for example, did the theme tune.
I was going to say that, actually. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Robbie Williams, but I do remember that song and I did sort of, like, I'd remember the lyrics as it was happening, so, you know, you sort of go along with it, yeah.
I felt oddly nostalgic, actually, at that point. Because Robbie Williams was huge in the early 2000s. Yeah. I mean, you know, he was right at the top of everything. And so this film did have a certain kind of nostalgia about it, I think, for me, of a yeah. time that's now long past, when my son, with whom I went to watch it at the movies, was a child, and the world seemed somehow more innocent. And maybe that's ridiculous. And I think that has possibly influenced my memory score of the movie, this kind of nostalgia for what feels in retrospect a more innocent time.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I was saying before as well, with the sort of, as a kid, this movie's great and it works, it's hilarious, but as an adult, I don't know if that's just me anyway. I feel like that doesn't agree with the point that you just made, but I don't know. Yeah, maybe if I saw it with my son, if I had a son, got a daughter though, then it would have the same impact, you know what I mean?
Oh my goodness, you've just revealed on a podcast I'm a grandfather. How dare you? What were you thinking? Hey, there must be loads of controversial opinions that you have about this movie.
Yeah. I've got, yeah.
Okay, so I'll drop in here with our regular introduction to controversial opinions. This is a regular feature of our show, and it's very straightforward. Sam has controversial opinions, and he expresses those controversial opinions to me. If you hear the controversial opinion, that means I've allowed it. And if you don't hear it, it means that it was so controversial, we don't want to get cancelled, and you won't hear it. So you must have some controversial opinions about this movie.
I think I do. Yeah, one of them you might have to just say no to anyway, but I'll get to that.
Okay, let's hear controversial opinion number one.
This might be better than Mission Impossible. Definitely the second one.
I think I'm going to let that stay in.
Yeah, I think it's half sarcastic, but half true because of the second one.
I think there are a number of films that are better than the second one, second Mission Impossible. In fact, I'll go out on a limb and say nearly all films. It's not controversial to say that there are better films than Mission Impossible 2.
Exactly. Yeah.
Saying this is better. That's somewhat controversial, but I'm going to allow it. Okay, fine. Controversial opinion number two.
I don't know how controversial, but maybe just the topic as a whole. If I die before Rowan Atkinson, I want him to crash my funeral, just like in this movie.
Oh, that's going to stay in. Yeah. Let's hope that you don't. Scene. But that is actually one of the funniest things, isn't it? It's extremely funny. I mean, we should be fair about Rowan Atkinson, because we kind of dismissed our comments and whatever about his casting in this. But I mean, you know, this Mr. Bean, Blackadder, this is a guy that knows what this is. A genuinely funny guy. Okay. Man versus Bee. If you don't get the joke, that's on you. But I mean, as a comedy actor of the last 30 or 40 years, there aren't that many that are better, right?
Yeah.
Kudos to Rowan Atkinson. True. So that's not controversial to me at all. The controversial bit is, I don't want you to die. And hopefully, when that does happen, I won't be there to witness Rowan Atkinson dancing on your grave.
So there's an order of who has to die then. Okay.
Well, obviously, that's just how it works. Let's not get too deep in on this, but no. I think Theoden expressed it best in The Two Towers.
Yeah, true.
And Gondor will answer. Oh, wait, no, that's
different.
Do we have a third controversial opinion?
I do, third and final for this one, yeah.
Oh, good heavens, you're prepared.
This is the one that you might have to say no to, just simply because it's probably also my conclusion. The sequels for this film are miles better, kilometres if you're from the UK.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to allow for that. It is controversial, but I think I'm going to have to allow it to stay in because it's probably true. And if I'd said no, then nobody would hear the fact that you said something that's probably true.
I'll keep that one brief because I do want to bring it up later on.
Okay, yeah. No problem. And moving on to out-of-pocket takes and trivia, of which I'm sure you have lots and lots and lots.
Just the one? Oh, yeah, trivia, yeah. But also no. Out-of-pocket take is Johnny English a good spy? I think yes.
Well, he gets the job done.
Eventually.
I mean that is at the essence of this movie. This is a guy that's clearly incompetent, but nevertheless is always successful. I mean, there is an argument in there that, you know, incompetence and success are not necessarily the same thing. Said every single person in the world that's ever had a boss. It takes a special kind of incompetence to be the boss, right?
Yeah, I suppose it does.
It does.
The car that Johnny English used was an Aston Martin DB7 Vantage, which was actually Rowan Atkinson's own car. That was quite cool.
I knew that. I knew that because I'd seen him. I'd seen that interview on Top Gear.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that might be where that was from.
And Rowan Atkinson is a real petrol head. I mean, he was, and I think still is, the record holder for driving the reasonably priced car around the track on Top Gear. He's a real car guy. And yeah, I knew that was his actual real car. In fact, that's one of those things, you know, like in Lord of the Rings, when Aragorn kicks the helmet and you say, broke his toe there. Yeah. That's one of the things I remember from this movie. You know, that's his real car.
I thought you were going to say in Lord of the Rings when Aragorn uses his own car.
Well, he did buy the horse.
That's true, he did.
It's true. So technically, he also used his own horse.
I still remember reading Return of the King and it just randomly mentions a caravan. It's like, what?
Yeah, I love that because that's true. Slightly off topic, but because Tolkien uses words that he uses them in the proper sense, but they've since moved on. There's another one that he uses, and I genuinely can't remember what it was, but it always made me laugh. He says something like, I think it's in the van, like caravan. Right. But he just simply says the words in the van. It always makes me chuckle.
Another bit of trivia is, after the movie's release, there was a false newspaper allegation that Rowan Atkinson had suffered a breakdown and checked himself into a mental health clinic. It was the Daily Mail that published the story, but they were forced to apologise because it wasn't true.
That's really interesting. What would have been his breakdown?
Yeah. I don't know, because maybe it just wasn't successful enough.
It was a reasonably successful movie.
Yeah. I mean, that was my next bit of trivia. But we've kind of already covered that anyway.
Yeah.
There we go. There's no point.
There was a thread that ground to a halt, wasn't it?
Well, it just, the trivia just repeats the point, really. That it just says it had two successful sequels after the fact.
But yeah.
We already knew that. So there you go.
It's a fact that we already knew, yeah.
I do try.
It was fine.
Not a fact, but I'll throw it in.
Go on.
Gunther is still inside because he's not out until 2028, according to the film.
That's true. Yeah. So Gunther is still there, rotting away. Yeah. Poor Gunther. He's
probably alive, right?
Do you know the bit? There is a bit in this movie that is quite funny. And I mean, there are many parts in this movie that is quite funny. But a bit that, I don't know why entertainment, I don't know why it popped into my head there, but it's a bit where he shoots the poor secretary with the dart from the pen. Yeah. and then tries to hide it. That for some reason, that was the best bit in it for me. Made me laugh. She
came back in a wheelchair. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, one of the things that I do like, which is a bit of a throwback, I suppose, is where Agent One comes in, he throws the coat, lands perfectly on the coat rack or whatever, and then he tries it and it goes out the window.
There are so many good jokes in this as well. Like when he's climbing up the tube and he gets covered in effluence, I think we can call it. And then the next time he meets the other person, whoever it is, they're not. And it's just things like that. It is.
Yeah.
I think it's possible to be. It's possible to overthink movies like this.
Because
it is actually quite funny.
Yeah, I think. You have to kind of give it the benefit of the doubt at that point, yeah.
Hey, should we move to our scores now? I think I am. I think I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm ready to do that.
Okay, so I chose the movie, right? It's so long ago, I don't remember. But I think I did. Okay, so I gave it what I think is a very generous 8 out of 10 from memory. Yeah. I think my memory score is based on everything I've already said. It is actually quite funny. Rowan Atkinson is born to play roles like this. The nostalgia thing for a more innocent time is quite high, and that influenced me giving it an 8, but there's no way this movie is an 8 out of 10, and so on balance I'm going to go down, and my benefit of hindsight rewatch score is 5 out of 10.
Okay, yeah, I think I agree with everything that you said. I think it is funny. I think sometimes for me though the jokes got a bit stale, but I think, as I've said a couple of times now, it as a kid, they're hilarious. As an adult, a bit grating. But I think, as I keep sort of alluding to, I do think the sequels improve upon it a lot.
Absolutely.
Like, I can already think of other funny jokes in those sequels. Yeah. And I know we didn't see them in the cinema, but it is interesting to revisit those ones. I think they started with something good here. It's like a little spark of it. And then it grew into a great big flame that totally worked. And I'd go and see another Johnny English if it happened.
Absolutely, I agree.
I do think this film, for me, hasn't aged quite as well. And I do think it is based on nostalgia. But I think I'm going to drop down to a 4 out of 10. It's not terrible, but I would watch it again. But there are, you know, I'm not going to go straight to it, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
It's a Sunday afternoon movie. If you're flicking through channels on a Sunday afternoon and you want to nod off after your roast dinner, this is the perfect movie to do it on. And you're
That's
right.
Exactly.
It is the beginning of an idea that became better over time.
Yeah.
So we have gone from being quite generous with a 15 out of 20 from memory to, I think, very reasonable 9 out of 20 overall.
Yeah.
I think that probably sums this movie up pretty well. What would be your one-word review of Johnny English?
Just trying to think about that. I kind of just want to use the word spark again.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where it is for me. It's this idea that develops into something good.
Funnily enough, my one-word review would be basically the same. I would go with potential.
Yeah, I like that. That's better than spark.
You can see, well, it's the same thing, but you can see they're reaching for something and they didn't quite achieve it in this that they later went on to achieve.
Yeah, exactly.
So by tradition, it would now be your turn to choose the next movie, but Sam and I have had a conversation about that.
Before we get to the idea, I'm glad we did. I saw something briefly, and I thought that is a movie we need to cover on this podcast. It's not on the list, but it is something I wanted to watch. Unfortunately, I don't think we can do it, because as far as I'm aware, this movie doesn't exist in any sort of way that we would be able to watch it.
Fascinating.
And that's the film from 2000, I think, off the top of my head, the Rocky and Bullwinkle film.
Yeah.
I'm sure I loved that as a kid, but I don't know how to watch it. It was on one of those second-hand shops, which name we won't name. The closest one was, like, not close at all.
Wow, yeah, I'd forgotten all about that.
To not give away a location.
You would have been very young, and so that would have been a cartoon at the cinema. But yeah, that's a fascinating Rocky and Bullwinkle movie.
Yeah.
We should definitely
see. Don't know where it is.
Okay, so let's make a deal now, okay?
Okay.
The deal is this. When we get to the end of our extensive list, and by the way, listeners, if you're thinking that we're making this up, we aren't. There's still at least 100 movies left for us to watch, and our 100th episode will be Catwoman. Let's make the final episode, when we literally have got to the end of the list, the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie, and by hook or by crook, we will find a way to watch it. This gets us then nicely into where we're going with this, because some time ago we were asked the question, if we were given $200 million, which movie would we want to remake? And we landed, I certainly landed on the 1980 classic Flash Gordon, and I think you landed somewhere else. But since that time, since that time, we've had a number of emails asking us about Flash Gordon and what we would do with it. Okay, and so we've decided that we need to take a break for a couple of weeks, and we need to end season 2 because it's basically gone on forever. And so this is our plan. So Sam and I will go away and watch the 1980 classic Mike Hodges movie, Flash Gordon, which is a movie that I've seen a number of times, and I don't know if you've ever seen.
I must have seen bits and pieces here and there, but I've never sat and watched the whole thing.
Okay, so when we give it our score, I'm going to give it a memory score, and you're going to give it an expectation score. Okay, so what you expect.
Foresight.
Yeah, foresight score.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go away and rewatch the movie, or watch the movie for the first time. Then we're going to come back and talk about it, and then decide who we would cast without consulting, so we can have an argument about it, who we would recast in our remake of that movie.
Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal is in every movie. So whether or not he counts is a different conversation. So that will be the season finale, the 1980 Mike Hodges classic Flash Gordon. My memory score, Sam's benefit of foresight score, a watch again, recasting discussion. Good idea?
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Okay, so I will go with, I'll very briefly, because I've been talking for too long. My memory score of this movie is that it is by some significant degree the worst movie ever made and falls into the category of so bad it's good. Very different from, I suspect, what you're expecting. It's a 10. It's a massive 10 from me. So, So what would be your Foresight expectation score?
I don't know. I feel like you've sold it so well my entire life. I don't know. I think I'm going to go for an 8 as a sort of prediction Foresight score. Okay. I think only because so bad it's good, like, rings well to me. I know several references, Gordon's Alive, that kind of thing. I'm looking forward to it. So I think, yeah, I don't know how well my version of it will turn out, but this version I'm looking forward to watching.
Okay. I'm very much looking forward. When we get onto the conversation about, hey, let's talk about the soundtrack. Let's see how that conversation goes. So we will be back next. We'll be back next week with our season finale, Flash Gordon. We do get some emails, and I've had 6 emails that ask us specifically about Otterfest and how can people contribute to Otterfest and when will it happen. Now, the answer to the questions to those 6 people that have emailed is, I don't know, should we lie? Should we tell them?
Okay. Yeah.
Let's not say anything now. Let's because we get to the end of season 2, we'll make the big Otterfest announcement then. How's that?
Okay.
So, yes, there is an update. Stuff is happening. If you're interested in Otterfest, next episode, I'm afraid. Hey, do you know what day it is today?
No, but my computer says it's puffling season.
I beg your pardon. It's what?
Puffling, like the bird.
Puffing season.
No, puffling, apparently. I think it's like a baby version.
Ah, okay. Puffling.
I've clicked it, see what happens. What is puffling season? Oh, okay, I know what it is. Yeah, it's the time of year where the locals throw baby puffins into the sea.
Hang on. How?
Did you not know? I learned about this recently, I think.
Please, you're going to have to say more because we were about to end the podcast and you brought up puffling day.
It's not technically on the story that I'm looking at, but what I do know is that there's a certain time of year where puffins have little baby puffins. And in order to teach them how to fly, it's turned into this whole community thing where they chuck them off a cliff and they learn how to fly. It's a genuine
thing. Why do the puffins not do that? I'm sorry. Bear with this. I'm now Googling puffling day.
There's videos and everything.
I can't believe I've got to my age and I don't know what that is.
A baby puffin's born in August. There's a video that's going through. The whole town goes out at night to rescue them. Oh, yeah, so they don't take them from the cliff. They take them from around the area.
So the internet says this. Baby pufflings are driven by hunger to leave their burrows and fly out to sea.
Right.
And they are guided by the full moon at the end of August. But the problem is artificial lights in towns can confuse pufflings, causing them to fly into populated areas instead of the ocean. Once in town, they are at risk from traffic, cats, that's mean to cats, starvation, making them vulnerable. So the Puffling Patrol is a community effort to save birds and help them reach their destination. So they search around at night through the towns, they find pufflings, and then the next day they throw them off a cliff. Listen, if you're out there and you are listening to this and you are a pufflinger, fair play. I mean, that's a thing. That's a whole nother mug. That's a whole nother t-shirt. It's puffling day. I mean, forget Otterfest. Puffling Fest is where we should be going. Well, all that's left for us to say is if you are puffling today, knock yourself out. We have the most amount of respect for you that it's possible to give somebody for doing something which sounds ridiculous, but is in fact very, very good. So happy Puffling Day. Happy Puffling Day to you, Sam.
Thank you. And to you. And to those who celebrate.
Yeah. And if you don't celebrate...
Which is what you just said.
But if you don't celebrate Puffling Day, why not? What is it that you have against baby puffins? Do drop us an email.
I'm sure when I discovered it, It was like a celebrity promoting it. I can't remember who it was. Tom Hiddleston, maybe, but that would just be, I can't put words in someone else's mouth.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, anyway, if you are a Pufflinger and you want to email us, you can, benefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com, or indeed you can email us for any reason. And if we don't reply to your email, I'm really sorry, it's because we get quite a lot, but we do reply to some of them, and we often feature your questions here. We'll be back next week with, I'm so excited, Flash. Anyway, this is the worst and longest ending anybody's ever done to a podcast. So, goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Happy Puffling Day.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Bye-bye.
Cool.
Bye.
Bye.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?